In Berkeley, I'm Amanda Bellerby. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. More than 1,000 people are expected to converge in Flagstaff, Arizona, to march for the protection of sacred sites and for the human rights of the indigenous peoples of the Americas on Saturday, March 25th. The March for Sacred Sites and Human Rights is uniting students with indigenous peoples of the Americas to stand together against a corporately controlled global economy and for sustainability and social justice. The Native movement based in Flagstaff, Arizona, is playing a key role in organizing the march. Joining me on the phone is Yvonne Peter. Yvonne's chairman of the Native movement, and he is the former chief of the Gwich'in Nation from Arctic Village in northeastern Alaska. He served as the co-chair of the Gwich'in Council International and on the executive board of the Alaska Intertribal Council. Yvonne's an advocate of indigenous people's rights, youth, and a balanced world. He's active as a speaker, strategist, a writer, and organizer. Yvonne Peter, welcome to Flashpoints and Pacifica Radio.
Thanks for inviting me.
There are three things, all significant, that I need to ask you about. The first is, of course, this March for Sacred Sites and Human Rights on Saturday the 25th in Flagstaff. Another is the work you're doing with Native Movement in Arizona, a remarkable organization. And lastly, the problem of the U.S. government, who seem bent and determined to destroy the ecological diversity of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which is part of your homeland and where your people have stood your ground for many years to defend your way of life, your human rights, and the porcupine caribou herd. I wasn't planning to ask you about this latter subject, but the U.S. Senate recently approved a spending bill which had attached to it the provision to drill in the Arctic Refuge, and now it goes to the Congress. So let's start there, since it is your homeland and you were, until quite recently, the chief of the Gwich'in people. How did this vote pass, and where do we go from here?
Well, basically, you know, over the last year, the Congress, which is a Republican majority since the last election, has been, like you say, bent on trying to open Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling and exploration. And throughout the years, you know, from the time I was about 12 years old, really, in my own village, and I was being told about why we need to protect our way of life as Gwich'in people and protect our homelands, which includes the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, because of our reliance on the porcupine caribou herd and the other animals and the water being clean and whatnot. We've been struggling to protect this area. And in Congress, they've consistently failed to pass the Arctic Refuge as a bill on its own. They've failed when they've attached it to other major pieces of legislation, primarily because we've been able to utilize the filibuster. Over this last year and a half, the Republican majority has been trying to find ways that they could push the Arctic Refuge through as an attachment to some completely unrelated piece of legislation to access the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which we were able to stop last year. And then, again, in late last year, Senator Stevens from Alaska tried to attach the Arctic Refuge to the military spending bill, which was also stripped from the spending bill before it passed in its final version. And so, you know, again, this year, we are presuming that the majority in Congress, being Republican and Bush being the president, that they were going to continue to try to find ways to put the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge into spending legislations of some sort or another. What we are doing now is the same as what we were doing last year, which is basically looking into the processes and finding the ways and the moments that we need to apply the pressure that we have as Gwich'in people, as well as with all of our supporters, you know, throughout the nation, many of which are based there in the Bay Area, to strip the language once again from the legislation before it gets to a final phase.
Can you tell us your story, Yvonne Peter? When you were young, your elders saw that you might grow to be a leader someday. Is that right?
Tell my story. The story is, I guess, a long story, even though I'm young. You know, like all of us, we have a path there for us in life. And when I was very young, probably about 5 years old or so, my mother felt the calling to send me to my village, which was called Bashanko in my language, to be raised by my grandfather and my uncle traditionally. So from that very young age, I was kind of raised in a particular way. And then once I became a teenager, brought back down to the city to get a better Western education. And I think it just naturally unfolded that I moved my way into leadership among our peoples, being Gwich'in people as well as the other Athabascan nations from interior Alaska.
And how old were you when you were elected chief?
I think I was about 23 or 24. I was probably the youngest among the Gwich'in to be moved into a leadership position like that. It was definitely challenging for me because there was a lot that I had to learn in that first year, which many of the lessons came in a harsh way by me making mistakes and kind of stumbling here and there. I think after that first year, things really smoothed out, and I ended up having very strong support.
And soon after then, the Bush people got elected.
Yeah, Bush moved in, yeah, shortly, right there, when I was moving into leadership. And one of the first things, interestingly enough, that happened was Gail Norton actually took a trip up to Arctic Village and met with me. I don't know what they were thinking, but they must have been thinking that sending an older Secretary of Interior woman to meet with a young chief in his 20s would be some kind of a advantageous position for them politically in trying to get the Arctic Refuge open. But it ended up flipping on them, and all the media that came out of that was like, you know, 23-year-old chief lectures Secretary of Interior Gail Norton for 2 hours and gives her a lesson, you know, on the history of Indigenous peoples and protection of the Arctic Refuge. And the only response that they ever had coming out of Gail Norton, her quote was, well, it's great that, you know, Yvonne cares about his own people, but he needs to think about the millions of children in California who need cheaper energy.
Is that the position she took with you?
Well, interestingly enough, when she came to my village, we probably visited for about 4 hours together. About half an hour of that was just the two of us alone, but I had invited many of the chiefs from the surrounding tribes and leaders to come sit with me. And then she brought with herself a few of her assistants, and then there was the media that came along, of course, to that meeting because people were interested. And really, you know, what happened was that she just sat there and listened because it was at the very beginning of her term. And so I basically took the opportunity to really break down as much as I can about the politics and injustices and the situations of the Alaska Native people. Now, once she left that meeting, what she did with that knowledge was not too much and not too many great things for our people, which isn't expected. On our part, we were able to utilize the media that was there to send out the message about protection of Arctic Refuge, which is what happened. And, you know, after that point in time, she never came up and visited with me again. And so it was a successful meeting for us.
How long were you the chief?
I was serving in the role with among the tribe for 3 years through my early 20s. And then I stepped down when my daughter was born because in that role, I was on the road maybe 90% of the time traveling. And one of the elders from my tribe recommended to me it would be good for me to spend some time with my family while my children are young and that later I would be able to return into leadership among our people and I'll have more knowledge and experience.
Now you're in Arizona organizing a Native movement. How did this organization start?
The Native movement was founded in Alaska, in Arctic Village, by my wife, Ine Begay, and I. And Ine is Navajo, which is why we're here in Navajo country in Arizona. And we founded the organization because we had a lot of strong vision, and we found a struggle working through the bureaucracies of larger institutions and even the tribal governments. And so we founded Native Movement so that when we wanted to have a project occur, we could just make it happen. Later, when we moved here to the Southwest, we found there was a lot of other young Indigenous people who had a lot of strong vision and desire. They'd already made a lot of organizations and were working on projects, but none of us were 501c3, and none of us had really had a strong, developed administrative capacity. And so when we met, we decided to turn Native Movement into a collective of organizations as well as organizers so that we can help move all of our projects forward in a way that we were being called, you know, in our own paths. Basically, you know, when we were looking at the situation that we're facing as Indigenous peoples, we realized that it won't be enough just to protect a certain piece of land if our people are still being impacted by colonization, by internalized oppression, by substance abuse and domestic violence and things like that. Or if we're also consuming tons of energy like any typical North American person, you know, and living an unsustainable way of life. And so when we looked at it, we realized that there's a lot of work that needs to be done nowadays, and that it's too much for any one of us as leaders, especially as young leaders, to take on all of that. And as we sat in a circle with each other, we realized that all of us were feeling called to put our time and energy into different areas. And so it's from there that the projects came. And so each of our projects are basically coming from the calling that one of our the young people we work with has. So we do projects like building cob homes and straw bale homes out on the reservations. We do permaculture projects, planting huge fields of corn and squash and whatnot. This year we're doing fruit orchard restoration out on Hopi lands, and also we're restoring some of the terrace gardening that was traditional to that area, is still traditional to that area. We're doing protection of sacred sites like protection of Dokotli, which is the San Francisco Peaks here locally, which is one of the focuses of the march on the 25th. And we're also doing youth projects like media trainings that we just had for the first 2 weekends in March on training youth on how to use cameras, use Final Cut Pro and things like that. And we're doing what we're calling urban agricultural projects under a program we call the Edible Landscape Initiative, which is basically converting public parks in the city of Flagstaff as well as people's front yards and backyards into both aesthetically pleasing and food-producing pieces of land. So those are just some of the projects that we're doing.
I saw you speak, Yvonne Peter, at a conference recently. It was a very strong speech and very moving. And you began by talking about relations and relationships. Can you give us a little bit of that? Because I think it provides a good context for the march on Saturday.
At that speech, I was talking about kind of the philosophy that we have from my own peoples, which is the foundation, I think, of a lot of indigenous peoples, people who are really connected to the land, to the earth, in their way of life. Within that philosophy is understanding that our life is very much about our relations with ourselves, our relations with other people, our family, our communities, and then also our relations with the animals, you know, with the land, with the water, with the elements, and how we carry out our relations throughout our lifetime. We also understand that there's the interconnectedness and interrelatedness of those relations and how we are dependent on one another. For example, the Gwich'in dependent on the caribou, the porcupine caribou herd. For us, you know, when we look out at the world and the way things are headed right now, some of the things that are very unsustainable and decisions being based on greater profit and greed for power and money and these things, there's a lot of violence and unhealthiness within that context. And so a lot of the work and the approach that we carry is from this foundation of healing our relations with ourselves, with the people, and with all of creation.
So take that into the context of this march. Why are you and the Native movement marching with students on Saturday in Flagstaff?
They're Aztlan, you know, Machistas, which are basically people who, in my understanding, are acknowledging the heritage of being indigenous to the Americas. And we're marching together with them and with many other people that are coming together for indigenous people's rights, for protection of our sacred sites like Dokonsleet, which is a major battle here, protection of San Francisco Peaks that's occurring right now with reclaimed water trying to be put up onto a mountain that's sacred that over 13 tribes come to and have their prayers every year because it's where the water is generated from for this whole area. And so we're coming together for that, and then we're also coming together to really build upon our relations as indigenous peoples throughout the Americas. Because, you know, for many of our peoples, we see the colonial borders of the United States, of Canada, of Mexico, you know, of all these different Western colonial nation states throughout the Americas that have really divided our peoples. And in many cases, they literally have divided our peoples, like the Tohono O'odham peoples down in southern Arizona. You know, I have one friend whose mother is from 2 miles south of the border and whose father is from 1.5 miles north of the border. And they try to prevent her from going back and forth from her mother and father's homelands during ceremony times. And it's a completely Western established border that's separating a people, and in that case, even a family. My people, the Gwich'in, our people are split in half, too, between Canadian border and the United States border. And I even had an experience once of going into Canada when I was hunting, which, you know, in my land, it's like there's no roads, there's no stores, there's no nothing. And I was just out in the middle of the woods hunting, decided to visit one of the villages that happens to be on the Canada side. And to be able to get back to my village, they had to send my identification card from my village to the city of Fairbanks. They flew me to customs in Fairbanks to meet up with my ID to prove I was a U.S. citizen. Then I got to go back to my village on the Alaska side of the border. And so the march for migrant rights, basically, for human rights of indigenous peoples in the Americas is about showing to the world and expressing to people that the sacred sites of indigenous peoples need to be protected, and our rights, our human rights as indigenous peoples, you know, needs to be respected as well, and that the Western colonial borders that were put here are unjust in so many ways to our people who want to be able to still freely travel and visit our families and our peoples throughout the Americas. The march is also, I think, becoming kind of a symbol of unity, of building solidarity within the many different movements that are occurring right now within North America and the Americas, realizing that many of us, despite our nationalities, our histories, our heritages, are wanting to work towards a place where we have more balanced relations with one another and with the earth. And a lot of that is going to have to be challenging the systems of oppression and domination that are binding us, you know, from being able to be who we are as people.
And where is the march going to go? From where to where in Flagstaff?
The march is going to be starting at the Northern Arizona University, and from there we're going to be marching through the downtown area, and we're going to end up on the lawn of the City Hall, and we're going to set up a stage there and have speakers.
We're going to have to leave it right there. My guest has been Yvonne Peter of the Gwich'in Nation. He's also the chairman of the Native Movement based in Flagstaff, Arizona. Yvonne Peter, thank you so much for joining us today on Flashpoints.
And thank you very much, and to everyone out there that's supporting Indigenous people's rights.
For more information on the Native Movement, it's nativemovement.org. And for the Gwich'in People Struggle, it's GwichinSteeringCommittee.org.
I am 25 years old, and I've flown a million miles to tell the world my people here will die if the oil drilling comes, if the caribou are gone, with no place to birth their babies, and my son is only 4 years old. It's hard to go away, 'cause I love to watch him growing. Every day I see the future in his eyes, and I can feel the elders' pride that we are fighting to preserve the Gwich'in way. I am 25 years old, and sometimes I am afraid, but I know we stand together. And I speak my heart, how we love our land. And I pray that I can make them understand our way of life for 10,000 years. How my ancestors have always hunted here.